come from the fire. We come from the water. We come from the mountain and the air, the symbol of spirit. Spirit that is part of us and everything. Some say that it can't be seen, touched, or tasted. Yet, if you have witnessed anyone die, you might have that experience of seeing the spirit or the essence of that person exit the physical form. I see spirit when someone is generous with their time, with their attention, with their heart. I see spirit when children play. I see spirit in the wind. Spirit is an energy that can sometimes be seen, certainly can be felt, that moves through all living forms, moving through that mountain and through the water and through the fire. So when one hears the term spiritual work, I understand that to mean work or practice that increases the experience or awareness of this ineffable spirit. The Buddha taught over and over that generosity is the first door we walk through if we are serious about our spiritual work. So states Gary Larkin in Love Dharma. If spirit is in some way connected to our interdependence, our connection to others and to all life, then to deepen this understanding, it is suggested that we practice giving as the first door to our spiritual work. Why? I say because when we are coming from that giving or generous heart, we can't help but be open if we are truly giving, truly generous. We are coming from a full, sometimes vulnerable place, vulnerable only in the sense of open. And we are coming from a strong place. And when we're strong in this way, living from this generous heart, then the community that we are in is also strong. And then society, too, is stronger, more equitable, more just. When we are open, we are receptive to others, not closed, not protective, not defensive, not all walled up. And sometimes that's a lifetime work to arrive in a place in our lives when we can risk being open and receptive. Perhaps this is why the Buddha taught that that first door we walk through on the path to understanding spirit is to be open and generous. The Buddha also taught that giving releases our freedom. The Buddhist understanding of human nature is that we humans are naturally self-centered and grasping in nature, holding on to what we think is ours. Mine, 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 says the 2-year-old. Mine, 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 says the 52-year-old. Grasping happens at all ages. And some people never have the opportunity to learn what the opposite of grasping is. Never learn the joy, the freedom that is experienced when one gives. When you discover the opposite of that closed fist, when you have an experience of opening that fist and opening the palm and your heart, because they go together, through an act of giving, you experience a release, a sense of freedom. Letting go and giving are closely related. I invite you to do a little practice on this right now, a little demonstration that we can all do together. If you close your fist, you just feel the tightness, right? If you can feel it, if you're grasping enough, strong enough, you'll also feel it up your arm and across your chest, literally shutting your heart down. And then when you open your palms, the tension goes, and I find my body breathing at that moment. Now, if you add to this physical action a word spoken to yourself, grasp and think or say quietly to yourself, mine, mine, mine. And then open your palms and think or say, yours, yours. And try that a few times to yourself. And when I do this closed and open action, as I said earlier, my body impulsively follows a natural impulse to breathe in, expand, and I get a bigger breath, and I exhale more, and that's my energy going out into the world. This is a small experience of what the Buddha taught. It's a small experience of the spirit, the exhale of giving, and that feeling of generosity and freedom. So today, we are learning from three different spiritual religious traditions. Buddhism, as we've referenced already, Hasidism, which is a form of Judaism, and American indigenous. Now I get to tell you a story from the Hasidic tradition, as told to Doug Lippman and available on the Learning to Give site, an online resource whose mission is to empower people to be giving and caring citizens of the world. Once, the disciples of Baal Shem Tov decided to prepare him a special Sabbath. Baal Shem Tov was a mystical rabbi who lived in Ukraine in the 1700s and is considered the founder of Hasidic Judaism. The disciples worked for days to make sure that everything was just as it should be, so that the spirit of the Sabbath would descend as never before. At last, a few minutes before sundown on the Friday night, they were all seated around the long table with Baal Shem Tov at the place of honor at the head of the table. The disciple who had been chosen for the special honor of lighting the Sabbath candles stood up and began to light the candles and say the blessing. Suddenly, Baal Shem Tov gave others a loud and sudden, shocking laugh. The disciple lighting the candles looked around to see what was wrong. If there was something amiss with his clothing, but everything seemed to be as it should be. Later, they began the Sabbath meal. They gave Baal Shem Tov the first bowl of the soup that they had labored over for so long. And he tasted it. He laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. The disciples were appalled. They rushed to taste the soup. But there wasn't anything in it that tasted humorous. Still later, they were singing the Sabbath songs. Oh, what a strength a righteous woman has. There is no treasure rarer than this. Happy is the heart that relies on her, for such a heart can lack for nothing. Yay, da-dai, da-dai, da-yay, da-dai, da-dai. And as they sang, the Baal Shem Tov began to laugh and laugh and laugh and he could not contain himself. The laughter so took over him. It was the custom of the disciples that on Saturday night, after the spirit of the Sabbath had departed, they would choose one question between them and present it to Baal Shem Tov. And this Saturday, there was no debate as to what that question was going to be. "Holy Master," said the disciples, "why did you laugh 3 times during our Sabbath?" In answer, Baal Shem Tov said, "Come with me." And all the disciples crowded into Baal Shem Tov's carriage, and he drew the curtains over the windows, and they began to travel swiftly down the road. Several hours later, when he opened the curtains, they were in a very distant village. None of them had ever been there before. Baal Shem Tov went to the leaders of the village, and he said to them, "Bring everyone who lives in this village to the square right now." And when the Baal Shem Tov stood looking out over the crowd of faces, he said, "There is still one family missing." And after a few minutes, the people realized it must be the old bookbinder and his wife. They live on the edge of town. They must not have gotten the word. When this old man and this old woman entered the village, the old man saw who it was who was calling for him, and he began to wring his hands. Oh, holy master, I know I have committed a great sin. I only ask for your forgiveness. Bookbinder, tell my disciples and these people gathered here how you spent your Sabbath." Fearfully, the old man glanced at the illustrious students of the Baal Shem Tov and began to speak. "I am an old bookbinder. In my youth, I could earn enough that we had what we needed during the week and something special to greet the Sabbath. But as I have grown older, there is less and less. Finally, this Sabbath, for the first time, we had no Sabbath candles and only a few crusts of bread for our Sabbath meal. My wife, she was determined that we would observe the Sabbath as well as we had ever done. And so, just before sundown, she went through the motions of lighting the candles that were not there. And as she did, I saw a flash of light, and I understood for the first time that the light that I thought came only from the candles was also coming from her. And I shouted out, 'I love you!' right in the middle of the holy blessing. I got control of myself, and we went back to observing the Sabbath with due respect. But then later, we were beginning our humble meal. We only had warmed water for our soup, but I tasted it, and I felt nourished. And at that moment, I realized that the nourishment, which was all these years that I had thought only came from the soup, actually also came from her, from our being together after so many, many Sabbaths. And before I knew what I was doing, I jumped up and I kissed her. Shocked at my own behavior, I sat back down. I stayed in my seat properly until later when we sang the Sabbath songs. Oh, what a strength the righteous woman has. There is no treasure rarer than this. Singing these words, I realized what a great strength she was in my life. Happy is the heart that relies on her, for such a heart can lack for nothing. And suddenly, I knew, in spite of our great poverty, while I had her in my life, I lacked nothing. And then before I knew what I was doing, I jumped up, I grabbed her in my arms, and I began to sing and dance with her. Ya-di-da-da-da-di-ya-di-da-da-di-da-di. And at last I got control of myself and sat back down. "Holy Master," said the old bookbinder, "I know I have defiled the Sabbath. Please tell me what I must do for your forgiveness." The Baal Shem Tov looked at his disciples and spoke. "When this man and this woman spent their Sabbath in such deep and holy love, I was there with them and shared their joy. And when he spoke of his love for that woman, not only I, but the angels in heaven heard, and they smiled. And when he got up and kissed that woman, acting on that deep love, the angels in heaven saw them, and they laughed. And when the two of them joined their hands and sang and danced for joy, the angels themselves began to sing and to dance, and the eternal heart itself heard them and was warmed. On a Sabbath of such perfect joy, who would not laugh?" And that is the Hasidic story called The Three Laughs. Eat, love, laugh. What a wonderful metaphor for sharing our hearts, sharing our lives, and sharing our faith. There is so much joy and release in that giving, and such a warm, good feeling in discovering that everyday generosity that grows in our relationships, that nourishes, really nourishes our lives, and how the spirit of generosity is so simple. When we care for others and allow others to care for us. I'll leave you with another story. A story of giving and gratitude. This is a true story about a relationship of giving that crossed cultures and continents about 170 years ago. There's a teaching among the American indigenous Choctaw people who lived in the southern United States. And the teaching says that feeding someone is the greatest thing that you can do because it extends life. The first thing the Choctaw people would do when a visitor came to their home would be to offer them something to eat. Feeding people, nourishing them, welcoming them, including them, was all part of that teaching. In 1847, the Choctaw people living in the United States heard about the potato famine in Ireland, where 1 million people died of starvation when the blight wiped out the potato crop, which had been the population's staple food. 1 million people died of starvation, and 2 million people left the country, emigrated, because there was nothing left to eat. The Choctaw people related to the Irish famine and the Exodus because less than two decades before, they had been forced off their land and into the southeastern state of Oklahoma on what was then and now named the Trail of Tears. And many starved to death. They identified with the suffering of the Irish people and sent them a gift of $170 to buy food. Today, that sum would be equivalent to over $8,000. It was a huge amount, a huge act of generosity between two disenfranchised people, a stunning act of giving. I came to hear about this story this past year when a sculpture was raised in Ireland to commemorate this gift of generosity. This sculpture is called Kindred Spirits. It stands outside the small town of Middleton in County Cork, Ireland. The 6 meter tall feathers, all unique as a sign of respect, signify the feathers used in Choctaw ceremonies, and they are arranged in a circle, making the shape of an empty bowl that symbolizes the hunger suffered by the Irish people during the famine. I'm not sure in this moment that I would agree with the Buddhist definition of human nature being one of having a grasping nature. I think I believe in human beings who have not only a collected unconscious, as Jung would say, but a collected heart. Maybe we do have a natural heart of generosity. Maybe that is our true nature. One of the open-palmed, open-mind, open-hearted, welcoming to the world and each other. I don't discount that there are many reasons for each of us to remain closed and protected. But our purpose in living, I hope and I pray, is not to stay there, but to open ourselves to greater love and life. And one way to help us move in that direction is to practice giving. The song sung at this time last Sunday sums up this theme perfectly. From you I receive, to you I give, together we share, and by this we live. Let us sit now in a gentle quiet and let the images and the words settle in us. as we sail forward into our individual and collective future,